This is Case Closed, Crime Stories from the Golden Age of Radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. We begin this week with the adventures of Philip Marlowe and the Birds on the Wing, an episode from November 26th, 1949. And after that is Pat Novak for Hire and Sam Tolliver, an episode from April 23rd, 1949.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter of the prison of the grave. They dressed in red, white, and blue and jumped from an ancient biplane at 3,500 feet. Twice a day, every day, and nobody worried. Until $5 million went along just for the laughs, and death went along for the ride.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Birds on the Wing.
It had been the kind of quiet, workless week that speaks well for human beings and their relations with one another, but doesn't do much for a private detective's bank balance. So, when at exactly noon, a telephone call had jerked me out of Chandler's new novel, The Little Sister, and a voice edged with anxiety had dangled $100 worth of negotiable bait my way, I had snapped at it. But then, I wondered if I'd done the right thing, because it had been my must Hattie Pembroke, guardian of the millionaire, thrill-seeking screwball Paige Pembroke. And now, an hour later, I left the sunlight and felt my way into the gloom of the carefully tucked away Hollywood bar where she had suggested we meet. When I could see again, I spotted her at a corner table. That the old girl would be the other side of 50 and doing a little too much to disguise it, I had expected. But that she would be drinking her whiskey neat, I hadn't. When I approached her and introduced myself,
Mr. Marlowe,
she started to come right to the point, but didn't quite make it.
How rude of me. I'm sorry. You're probably dying for a drink. Oh, waiter.
Well, frankly, no, Miss Pembroke. I'm not exactly dying.
Now. I know you men and your early afternoon appetite for a friendly drink. There's no harm in it. Matter of fact, I've already had... Well, I've had a small drink myself.
No fooling.
Oh, waiter. This gentleman's order, please.
Yes, ma'am. What'll it be, sir?
Scotch and soda, if the lady will join me.
Oh, no, I couldn't.
Really?
Well, all right. Scotch for me too, waiter. Johnny Walker.
Yes.
Now, Mr. Marlowe, let's get down to business. Have you ever been to Oxnard, California?
Uh-huh.
Good, because that's where my nephew is. Also, it's where the Calumet Valley County Fair is being held.
Really?
Whatever that may be. Most important, it's where you can probably find out what kind of trouble Paige is in. You see, the poor boy is...
Down to his last $5 million. Now, I'm sorry, Miss Pembroke. I don't think I want the job after all.
Now, one moment. Why not?
Well, frankly, I hope you'll excuse the reference to actual living persons, but your polo-playing, motorboat-racing, daredevil nephew is a jerk.
I know. Paige Pembroke III is an unmitigated ass, a virile egomaniac, an idiot who's never done an honest day's work in his life. Wait, where is that drink?
Right here, ma'am.
Oh, thank you. Now, Mr. Marlowe, sit down and drink your drink. When I referred to my nephew as a poor boy in trouble, I was only trying to avoid saying all this.
Oh.
Your health, sir?
Yes. My health.
Now, your next question. Since I obviously share your sentiments about my nephew, why all this concern over him, correct?
Close.
Right. I want to help Paige Pembroke, Mr. Marlowe, because it's my job. My, shall I say, bread and butter?
All right, say it.
You see, I'm executor of his estate, which my brother, Paige's father, left for him. Well, as such, I get $20,000 a year until Paige is 35, another 6 years. But if Paige should die, disappear, or be committed to any kind of a public institution... Institution.
Oh.
Before then, the entire estate goes to charity, and I go find another job.
And specialized jobs like handling $5 million estates are hard to come by these days, huh?
Now, Mr. Marlowe, this letter here is all you have to go on. It was postmarked last night from Oxnard. Read it.
Oh. If you want your precious nephew to keep on being healthy, you better come and get him at once. The three of us had a nice little act going here at the Calumet Valley County Fair before he joined us just for laughs. We intend to have a nice little act going after he's gone. And one way or another, he's going to go. A friend, huh?
Yeah? Well, what do you think?
Oh, it's 5-1. It's nothing more than a woman spurned. Very young woman, Miss Pembroke. So you might be wasting $100 sending me up there.
Then you'll go. Good.
Yeah, but only because of my bank account.
Mr. Marlowe, there'll be another $100 for you if and when you get all this straightened out. Now, call me at my home, Beverly Hills. Crestview 5412.
4124?
Yes. As soon as you find out what's wrong. Oh, Mr. Marlowe.
Yes, Miss Pembroke.
On your way out, signal the waiter for me, will you please?
The ride to Oxnard was a pleasant but frustrating hour and a half drive along the kind of beckoning, sun-scrubbed Pacific shoreline that always demands to know why you have to work for a living. The ride through Oxnard to the sprawling county fairgrounds located at a semi-retired airport was a fast 10 minutes. So all in all, it was a little better than 3 o'clock, and there was still a measure of boyish bounce in my stride when I started past the prize cows and plain and fancy leghorns and headed for the midway, looking for the act Paige Pembroke had joined just for laughs. But it was 4 o'clock and I had checked a half a dozen death-defying numbers before I was standing in front of a banner Columbus could have used for a sail. It said I was getting warm. In iridescent orange cloth on black, it read, "The Plunging Comets. Taffy Star and Midge Maynard on wings of death with fearless Eddie Knapp at the controls. The greatest parachute act in the world, admission free. 5 and 9 p.m., north end of the Midway. Come one, come all." Yeah, this had to be it. At the north end of the Midway, just outside of a sagging, weather-peeled hangar, I found the World War I biplane that went with the Plunging Comets being mothered by a mechanic who didn't have grease on his face. And beyond that, on an inside wall of the hangar, were the parachutes used in the act, each on a separate hook, its owner's name carefully block-lettered on a card tacked above. Taffy, Midge, and Eddie. And then, scrawled in black crayon, the name I wanted most of all to see, Paige.
Lost something, mister?
The voice went with the woman and the woman with the act. At the top, there was what used to be called the boyish bob sticking out of a white aviator's helmet circa 1918. Then a bright red leather jacket open wide at the throat. Black riding breeches, black boots. The color of hair that stuck out and said this one was taffy.
I asked if you lost something. Have you?
Well, come to think of it, yes. 6'2", eyes are blue, and carries a big, big checkbook. Seen one around?
Maybe. Why? Who are you?
Name's Philip Marlowe, the millionaire's friend. I'm a yacht salesman. Here's my card.
Never mind your card or the very funny jokes. Now, what do you really want?
Paige Pembroke, before he breaks his neck in your act, or isn't he in it yet?
I don't remember. Now, your point. What is it?
A letter you could have written. A letter that says Paige is in trouble. Where is he?
Goodbye, Mr. Marlowe.
Take it easy, Wings. You wouldn't want to hold out on somebody who's only trying to help Brother Paige, would you? I mean, what reason could you possibly have? Other than $5 million you might want for your very own.
Why, you... I said goodbye.
What's the matter, Taffy? You having problems?
Yeah. This Mr. Yacht Salesman is Emmett Kingston, head of the fair's Midway. And you'd be surprised how popular he is with the concessionaries. Now, where are you going?
What else? Good day, Miss Taffy, Mr. Kingston. You know, sometimes it works. Lead with your chin, ride with a punch, and watch for your opening. And I figured I'd try it just that way. So 10 minutes later, when Emmett Kingston, who was carnival people from checkered vest, past ornate watch fob to high button shoes, and shaped like a bowling pin, left Taffy and started trundling down the Midway, I went after him. When he stopped in front of a lunch wagon, I stopped too. And when he went in and approached the man playing pinball machine, who was maybe 5'4", and from where I stood conscious of it, I was still behind him. At the pinball machine, a stranger with a thin face that wore a nervous toothpick was also watching the little man's game.
Oh, boy, Doc, it's peachy.
So when I moved closer to the trio, my face turned away from Kingston. Nobody seemed to mind.
Well, jack of many trades, I see.
What? Oh, Mr. Kingston, how are you, sir?
Fine, Hershey, just fine.
800 more is jackpot, Doc. Come on, come on.
You wanted to speak to me, Mr. Kingston?
No, Hershey, nothing important except about last night.
Last night, sir?
Yeah, you were working late for a parachute rigger, weren't you, boy? Or am I wrong to consider 2 o'clock in the morning an odd hour for you to be folding these silks?
Hey, Doc, you're going to shoot it, aren't you? Which?
Of course she is. Go on, I'll shoot for the gentleman.
Yes, sir.
Hey, 2,300 3,000, 4,000. Hey, that's great. Now do that again with your last ball, Doc.
Was there something else, Mr. Kingston?
Yes, Hershey. Why were you near the chute at that hour? And don't bother denying that you were, because Eddie Knapp saw you there. Well, son?
Well, I was there to double-check the riggings, Mr. Kingston. Hey, look, I'm sick and tired of Midge Maynard complaining about the way I pack her chute. It's a stupid excuse, just trying to cover the fact that she's losing her nerve.
Hey, boys, don't ignore me. There is half of the jackpot.
Shut up, you, and get going. Rosie, get this stumble bum out of here, will you?
Sure, Mr. Kingston, whatever you say.
Oh, and it's social, huh? All right, Doc, I'm going. Of my own free will, too. But I could stay if I wanted to.
Hershey, you were saying?
Well, just this, Mr. Kingston. Midge Maynard and Taffy Starr fighting because of that Pembroke fellow, or because Eddie Knapp is crazy about Taffy is one thing. But bringing me and my work into it is different.
Meaning?
The parachutes Midge and Taffy use are identical. In the act, both girls jump from the plane wing at the same time. But Midge always gets scared and opens her chute sooner than Taffy. So Taffy is on the ground long before Midge. But this has nothing to do with the way I rigged the chutes, and I think
all right, all right, Hershey. Nobody's blaming you. Say, you.
Yeah?
You wouldn't be trying to sell another yacht in here, would you?
Just waiting for the finish of an exciting pinball game. Is that all right, or is it time to call Rosie again?
No, it's quite all right. We're leaving. You try for the jackpot. Come on, Hershey. It's about time for the 5 o'clock show.
Oh, yes, Mr. King.
Only 40,000 to go. Oh, it's the first time I ever hit the jackpot.
Oh, that's pretty good, Mr. Marlowe, considering that it wasn't your nickel you won on.
Oh. Now that you mention it, Mr. Pembroke, it wasn't. Which should take care of the introductions,
yeah.
Huh?
And that leaves very little.
But something.
But definitely. Marlowe, you can tell Aunt Hattie from me that at the moment I don't need a watchdog. And when and if I do, I'll go to the nearest city pound for one, not to a private detective agency.
I told myself it was foolish to slam the door on my way out. So I slammed the door on my way out. I started north down the midway toward the open stands and the 5 o'clock sharp performance of the Plunging Comets. When I got there, the act was already underway with the silver biplane taking off. Eddie Knapp in white at the controls, Taffy in her red jacket and parachute crouched on one wing, Midge Maynard in blue jacket and chute on the other. Then as they slowly gained altitude, High Button Shoes himself took over the PA. They did it up well. And by the time the plane was at about 3,000 feet, every pair of eyes was riveted skyward, and an expectant hush thicker than winter fog had settled everywhere. Knees drawn up tight, arms close into their sides, they jumped. Specks in the sky growing bigger as they fell. 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 feet, and then, from taffy chute cloth, long and colored, a huge flag rippling in the wind from the end of a long rope. The flag seemed to rise above her as she fell, until the slack was gone, and then suddenly her chute opened, billowing. And then Midge, another flag rippling from the end of a long rope, and then the flag drifting free. Midge's chute not open, Midge plummeting down, down to the hard ground. The thud slammed home all the way around, kicking hard at every stomach. A minute ago, a girl, very much alive. Our smashed, still body. Someplace near me, a woman cried. There was a bitter, sick, sweet taste in my mouth as I headed for the hangar where I'd first met Taffy. At the moment, I figured the guy who packed the parachutes was a good man to see. When I got there, the only one present was Emmett Kingston.
Stop right there, boy, and tell me straight and fast just who you are.
Philip Marlowe, Los Angeles private detective, Mr. Kingston.
You can prove that?
Sure. Here, is my business card, state license, county permit. I'm working for Paige Pembroke's aunt. She wants his nibs kept out of trouble.
Which has what to do with your being here now, Marlowe? Here at this hangar, I mean. Close to where the parachutes are kept.
I'm not sure, Kingston. I've only got a hunch. A hunch that Midge Maynard's death was no accident.
Yeah, I got more than that already, Mr. Detective. I've got proof.
Oh?
You see this flag? It's the one that came off Midge's chute. There's a long rope attached to it.
Yeah, I know. I saw the act. Pulls the chute open after the flag's flown a while, right?
Sometimes, but not tonight, Mr. Marlowe. Tonight it couldn't.
Why not? Wasn't it attached to the chute?
It was. One end to the chute release cord, the other to the base of the flag.
What went wrong?
Nothing. Nothing, Mr. Marlowe, except that the long rope on Midge's chute was cut in two by a very sharp knife.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe. But first, Sunday nights on CBS. The biggest bargain in show business today. Skelton, Bergen, and Benny without spending a penny. Amos and Andy, Eve Arden, Corliss Archer. Four A's, four-star entertainment. The Family Hour with its Hollywood stars and stirring dramas. The Contented Hour with its musical stars and brilliant form. Horace Hite with his rising stars. Eight great shows heard on most of these same CBS stations every Sunday night, with the ninth, Jack Benny, being heard on them all. Hear them all this Sunday night. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Birds on the Wing.
When Midge Maynard's grim accident turned out to be grimmer murder, I left Kingston and headed for a phone to call my client. Everywhere the chill of the viciously spectacular death lay like a soggy blanket. At the exposition office, I found a phone and finally got through to Hattie Pembroke. She listened up to the word murder and then, between gasps, insisted on coming out to help me. When I hung up, I turned to see that the pilot, Eddie Knapp, had been standing in the door listening. He looked sick.
What's it to you, mister?
What's what to me?
Midge, the long drop she took out there. And Pembroke, I heard you say Pembroke. What do you got to do with him?
Just a minute, fella. I'm not sure it's any of your business.
It's my business, all right. The kid gave me a big grin up there just before she jumped. And I watched her fall every inch of the way.
So did everybody else. Look, I know how you feel,
Eddie. You don't have any idea how I feel. Don't try to kid me. That mob out there loved it. That's the only reason they come to watch, the hypocritical buzzards. You got a finger in this pie, and angle all your own. I'm going to find out what it is.
Take it easy, Knapp. You're talking yourself into something real silly.
Yeah? Listen, ever since that louse Pembroke showed up here, there's been trouble brewing. Now Midge is dead. She was a friend of mine. Best friend I had.
Aren't you pulling a switch, Buster? What happened to your red-hot passion for Taffy Starr?
Oh, you nosy...
Come here, you jerk!
Look out for my arm!
Buzz boy, and unless you want to take off with a busted wing, stand still! Now get this, Eddie. I've got no beef with you yet. In fact, we might even be on the same team because I want Pembroke out of here just as much as you do. So cool off!
Who are you?
Private detective named Marlowe. I got news for you. Midge fell because her chute was fixed. She was murdered. You heard me.
Where's Hershey? He packed the chutes. Have you talked to him?
No, I can't find him.
You mean he's run away? With that filthy half-pint psycho?
Now, listen, for your own sake, Eddie, leave Hershey to me and the police. You know where he's staying?
No, I don't. In town someplace.
But didn't he ever tell you where? Come on, think, Eddie.
Well, yeah, he told me he had a buddy in town. Some guy who runs a pool hall. I didn't pay much attention.
That's enough for a starter. I'll find him. And keep a lid on your temper, Eddie. I'll see you. As I crossed the grounds to my car, I looked back once at Eddie Knapp standing in the office door, rubbing the shoulder I twisted for him. I hoped he'd stay out of circulation until I got back because the barnstorming flyer was charged up like a high-tension wire. The way he felt at me sparks no matter who he touched, Taffy, Pembroke, or Lyle Hershey. But my immediate worry was the location of the Lamming parachute packer, so I drove into Oxnard, found a phone booth, and went through the book calling pool parlors. I finally hit pay dirt at a joint called Pindy's.
It's 212 B Street, upstairs in the back.
212 B Street was an apartment, second floor rear over a boarded-up fish market. I went up the stairs to the half-open door with my hand around my .38. But the shooting part was all over. Because Lyle Hershey was crumpled in the bedroom door with the slovenly abandon that violent death always has. And the look of the puddle of blood under him, he'd been that way over an hour. I started backing out. Just as someone else started up the stairs. So I flattened myself against the wall beside the kitchen door and waited.
Lyle, it's Taffy.
Come on in. Take a good look, Taffy.
What are you doing in here? Where's Lyle?
It's a great act, baby. Holds water like a duck's back.
What do you mean?
That wherever there's murder, there's also motive, and you've got it, Taffy. Lots of it.
Me? What are you talking about?
Maybe he's dead, and maybe you killed him.
Keep him quiet because maybe he fouled up Midge Maynard's parachute on your orders. Consequently, he had you over a barrel.
On my orders? You're out of your mind.
And maybe you had to get Midge out of the way because you objected to Paige Pembroke and his idle millions horning into the act. Objected so strenuously that she was doing something about it, such as sending threats to his Aunt Hattie. Let's face it, baby, it fits.
But not tight enough, Marlowe.
Oh, Paige, darling.
Taffy, I got worried when you didn't come back to the car, so I decided... Hey, don't move, Marlowe, or I'll shoot.
Pembroke, if you got any sense in that gold-plated skull of yours...
I'll show it, Marlowe. I stood outside and listened to enough of your crackpot theories to know you're nuts. I don't need any advice from you at this point, so keep your long nose out of my business.
Now listen, you harebrained
dope. Just stand there like a good little boy. Taffy and I are leaving, and don't try to follow too fast. Go on, Taffy, outside. I'll follow you. So long, detective.
I let him go. Spent 20 useless minutes searching the almost bare apartment for any kind of an answer, but came up with nothing. Hershey's body at my feet convinced me there was nothing in Oxnard for Marlowe. And the sooner I dumped the whole mess into the laps of local law and order, the better. So I kicked out the 10-cent lock on the flimsy door and went down the stairs. I cut through an alley to the street and started across to where my car was parked. When I was bracketed by a pair of headlights on a sleek Nash convertible.
Hey there, Marlowe, what you doing here, boy?
Nothing. Even that's an exaggeration, Kingston. What about you? I thought you had a show tonight.
I certainly do, but the police don't give a hoot about that, boy.
No.
They insisted that I bring the rest of Midge Maynard's parachute harness in for investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Get in and come along, will you, son? Maybe you can help me out.
Okay. I want to see the police myself. Oh, is this Midge's stuff here?
That's it. Don't mind holding it, do you?
No.
You know, this is a waste of time, boy. All they have to do is pick up Lyle Hershey and they'll get all the answers.
They'll have to pick him up, all right, but he'll give them problems, not answers, Mr. Kingston. Lyle Hershey's dead. He was murdered.
You say Lyle...
Yeah, I just came from his place. Somebody shot him.
Great suffering sardines. Well, that means there's another killer. And still on the loose. I knew I shouldn't let him do it.
Let who do what?
Why, Taffy's going to give an air performance tonight. They pulled me into the grounds just as I was leaving and told me that Pembroke fella's going up Midge's place.
You mean those two showed up out there? It doesn't make sense.
Well, Pembroke's got plenty of nerve in his own chute, so I guess...
Shoot?
He's...
Wait a minute, Kingston. Stop under that streetlight, will you?
Why, What is it, Marlowe? What are you looking at?
Sure. Red smudges on the inside of these straps. There's something wrong here, Kingston, but I can't quite peg it. Say, Kingston, what time was that performance going to start?
Why, 9:00.
5 minutes and 5 miles to go. Come on, boy, turn the heap around and romp on it. We got a killer to catch. Swing out in front of the hangar, Kingston. Hurry.
It's empty. They're already out on the runway.
Yeah, there's one parachute still on the rack.
Why, that's Eddie Knapp's chute, and he never goes up without it. So who's at the controls of that plane out there?
I don't even have to guess. It's Eddie Knapp, all right, but he figures a suicide doesn't need a chute.
But...
Pile out, Kingston. It's as far as you go. I'm taking over from here.
What are you talking about?
Come on,
about?
Move. Get out. They're turning around now. Okay, he's going to make us run back this way. So long, Kingston. Here he comes.
Well, what are you doing?
There was no possible chance for a miss. Then I headed the car straight into the path of the plane, pulled the hand throttle out as far as it would go, and jumped. From there on, it was easy. The plane sort of stumbled over the car, rolled up on its nose, and stayed there. Quick work by the volunteer crash crew took care of that. A box of bandages took care of the collection of minor cuts and bruises all around, and the Oxnard police took care of Eddie Knapp. Everything had come out more or less even, except my client, Hattie Pembroke. She showed up at the finish line slightly on the bias, which no doubt was her normal late evening state. Also, she was as full of questions as an insurance adjuster.
Now, young man, I paid you a substantial sum of money for this day's work, and therefore, as your employer, I'm certainly entitled to a comprehensive report of the entire business. And I insist.
All right, Hattie, whoa. I'll run through it once more, and that's all. Now, look. First, the threatening letter you got was written by Midge Maynard because she was afraid Paige was going to break up the act. You get it? But the real screwball was Eddie Knapp. He was crazy about Taffy Starr and insanely jealous when your nephew and his money showed up. Knapp decided if he couldn't have Taffy, nobody else would, because he'd kill her.
And yet Midge Maynard was the one who got killed.
You catch on quick. Knapp killed Hershey because he was afraid Hershey had seen him tampering with the chutes. You get that?
No.
Oh.
On second thought, Marlowe, maybe you better submit a written report tomorrow.
Yeah, with adding machine and clothes. Now, look, Hattie, it's not
Marlowe.
Marlowe, Paige and I want to apologize. We treated you pretty badly tonight, and, well, you did save our lives.
Business is business.
Yeah, that's right. He was hired to do a job, dear, and he did it. I'm only interested in one thing, Marlowe. How'd you know it was Eddie Knapp?
Well, nobody had a really good motive for killing both Midge and Hershey, so when I realized the chutes had been switched, I knew Midge's murder was a mistake. And there it was easy.
How'd you find that out, Marlowe?
From red smudges on the inside of the harness shoulder straps. Red that had to come from your leather jacket there, Taffy. The one Midge always wore was blue.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Well, Hattie, write the detective a check so he can go.
That's the best idea you've had to date, Pembroke. And include on it the price of a repair job on Kingston's car, a new tweed suit to replace this one that lost knees and elbow on the runway when I jumped. And also, don't forget the bonus you promised for keeping your job alive, Hattie.
Oh, just a minute, Marlowe.
As for you, Pembroke, the only reason I'm not filing an assault and battery charge against you is that you've got great grounds for a countersuit.
What do you mean?
This!
Bless you, my boy.
Mail me the check. Good night. Well, a few informal cups of coffee at the Oxnard Police Headquarters cut through most of the paperwork. But at that, it was after 2 when I finally picked up my car and drove the inland highway for home, past dark, quiet farms, where down-to-earth people made down-to-earth livings and slept at night. Yeah, the countryside was full of them. So it was with a real sigh of relief that I finally opened the door to my apartment and looked forward to some peace and quiet.
Hello, Mr. Marlowe.
Aren't you Gracie Allen?
Yes.
Well, how'd you get into my apartment?
Well, you see this key?
Yeah.
Well, it didn't fit, so I opened the door and walked in.
Yeah, well, that figures. What can I do for you?
Mr. Marlowe, you're a famous detective, and I think you're just the man to handle a very important case for me.
Oh, really? Well, I'd be very happy to, Gracie. What's your problem?
Well, you see, Mr. Marlowe, our sponsor won't let my husband, Sugar Throat Burns, sing on our program.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to investigate the possibilities of another radio program George can sing on.
Mm-hmm.
And then our sponsor will realize he's wonderful and let him sing on our show.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, Gracie. And the next time you pass my house, I'll be very grateful.
Oh, thank you. And I'll be looking for you, too. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, and are produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. Script is by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Lois Corbett, Rita Lynn, Don Randolph, Junius Matthews, Jack Moyles, and Jimmy Eagles. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
It started with a kid hawking papers on Hollywood Boulevard and moved from there to a house full of hate on a quiet street, a blonde liar on ice skates and a corpse in a burned-out shack. And it all wound up right where it began, in the heart of the kid on the corner.
Two music programs that make your Sunday afternoon listening a delight and a pleasure are the Symphonette and the Choraleers. The Choraleers sing popular and semi-classical songs in stirring style. The Symphonette brings you excerpts of great orchestral works. Hear the Symphonette and the Choraleers tomorrow and every Sunday, as well as Sammy Kaye's Sunday Serenade, now heard exclusively on CBS. All of these outstanding music programs are heard on most of these same CBS stations. This is Roy Rowan speaking. Stay tuned now for Gangbusters, which follows immediately on most of these stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Pat Novak, for hire.
Sure. I'm Pat Novak. For hire. That's what the sign out in front of my place says. Pat Novak for hire. It's the easy way because down here on the waterfront in San Francisco, you can't afford to wait your turn. If you're going to make a living down here, you got to do everything you can. And you got to be out of the hen house by sunup. Even then, it doesn't work out always because you get trouble tax-free. It's like leukemia. There's nothing you can do about it. There's no way to duck it. You might as well try to start a conga line in a cathedral. I found that out Monday night when I met an old friend. It was the night before elections, and I was sitting in the office scratching married women out of an old date book when Sam Tolliver showed up. I hadn't seen him for years, but it was a nice, easy meeting. What other way is there when you're good friends?
You look just the same, Patsy.
Yeah. It's good to see you, Sam. Sit down.
Sure. Doing well, I guess, huh?
Oh, you get different stories. Where have you been?
Oh, all the hard luck stops. Syracuse for a while and Joliet. That's where I come from now.
Yeah? That's where they got a big prison.
Uh-huh.
When you came too far, Sam, you should have stopped in Oakland.
Huh?
That's right. If you're out here to play small robber, you better think it over. It's a tough town.
Don't ride me, Patsy.
I'm not Sam, but once you start losing them, it's hard to win again. I just thought you might want to know about San Francisco.
Thanks. Thanks, but you don't have to worry, Patsy. I got a smart streak. I'm here mostly to ask a favor.
Yeah?
Can you spare me one for old time's sake?
Medium-sized. Go ahead.
I want to borrow one of your boats.
Did you come all the way from Joliet to borrow a boat, Sam?
If it's going to hurt that much, forget it.
I just asked. All right. When do you need it? Tonight?
It's to pick up a package in the bay about 9 o'clock.
Sure, I'll run you out.
No, it's a little different, Patsy. I can't make the trip. You'd have to do it for me.
The favor's getting bigger, Sam.
You'd have to pick up the package and bring it back here. I'll be waiting at 10 o'clock. I guess you won't buy, huh, Patsy?
I'm not impressed.
It'd mean a lot to me, Patsy. It really would. And you couldn't get hurt, honest.
Nobody gets hurt, honest. It's the other way I'm worried about.
Well, I wish I could tell you, Patsy, but I can't. You know how it is. Sometimes you can't, but... Well, it's that way now, but... You'd be doing me a real favor, and you wouldn't get hurt.
That's what Henry used to tell his wives. All right, Sam. But you put out a bad story.
Well... Patsy, you have to go by the China Star. She's out in the stream. Just tell them you came for that package. They won't ask. Just tell them you want the package.
Yeah?
Talk to the captain. I'll be waiting here at your place about 10 o'clock. And, Patsy, it's important. Don't let anybody else have it.
All right. I'll see you here at 10.
Thanks, Patsy. It's a big favor.
We're old friends.
Yeah. We're old friends. Nothing wrong with them, huh?
No, there's nothing wrong with old friends, Sam, except sometimes they wear out on you. When Sam Tolliver walked out of there, I began to worry. I don't know why, because he was always a good guy. But if you leave good silk out in the rain, it'll shrink. Well, it was too late to change my mind now. I was going to get that package and say goodbye to Sam Tolliver. Only things didn't work out that way. You start with trouble and it never stops. It's like offering to buy aspirin for a two-headed boy. About 8:30, I took a boat and I started out into the bay. Halfway out into the stream, I had to give way to a tanker. After she throbbed by, I picked up the China Star, tied up at buoy 327. It was a broken-down old barge, so old I expected to find Noah hiding out in the bilges. Well, I went aboard, and they took me into the captain's cabin. It was going to be tougher than Sam thought. The old man had some questions, and he was about as smooth as a bag of fingernails. Right away, I got the idea.
What do you want?
I came out for a package.
Who are you?
What good will a name do you?
Who are you?
What do you care, mister? This isn't our dance. Just give me the package and I'll leave.
Keep shouting, tough boy, and when you're all through, tell me your name.
Now, look, I'm not out here to haunt your boat. You got the right face for it. I'm just passing through.
If you're running a small boat, you got papers. Let's see them.
Yeah. You're too handy in your own cabin.
Let's see. Novak, huh? You a Polak, Novak?
Yeah, and it feels fine. How's it being a pig these days?
Don't get jumpy. I just asked. Who sent you here, Novak?
Now, forget you asked. Just keep the package. I'm going home.
You walk home on the bottom, then. Now, look, Novak. Somebody steered you wrong. Maybe it was no questions once, but it's not that way anymore. Just want to keep the book straight. Who sent you?
Sam Tolliver. You need a pencil?
No, that's enough questions. You see, Novak, all you had to do was answer. Can have the package now and talk some more.
I'll take it now. Where is it?
On the desk behind you there.
Yeah, thanks.
You're welcome, Novak.
The captain didn't like company. When he hit me, I dropped down to the floor like a piece of hard-working lint. The last thing I remember was Sam Tolliver sending me out to this boat. I knew then I had no more business here than second trumpet in a string quartet. I could hear voices and people moving around, but it didn't help much. You can get that kind of service in a tomb. Somewhere along the line, they moved me, because when I woke up, I was lying in a cloud of platine on a couch in a different cabin. Class of people had improved. She was bending over me with a cold towel and a warm look. And from where I was, she had a figure like a shot of brandy on a winter night. When she said hello, you knew that all you had to do was send up a flare and relax.
Good evening. Welcome back.
Yeah.
How do you feel?
A little used up. I need recharging.
Here, put your head on my lap. There. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. Forget the towel. I'll struggle along this way. By the way, whose lap is it?
I'm Ellen Morrow.
Where's your friend?
The captain?
I guess so. The brave guy, Axel Arm.
He's down getting your boat ready.
What's he doing, punching holes in the bottom?
He'll be back in a minute. The package will be ready and you can leave.
No, you keep the package. The last time I got a headache.
I'm sorry about that. It was a mistake.
That's what they told Marie Antoinette. By that time, her head was 40 feet down the street. What's in that package?
It wouldn't help if you knew.
You let me work that out, huh?
Work out the answer, then.
How about Sam Tolliver?
Slow down, Patsy.
I'm not going that fast.
You're going the wrong way. I'll help you lick your wounds, darling, but I'm not going to get talky.
What do you got to lose?
What have I got to gain except your gratitude? I can get that any night with a couple of drinks.
How is he, Ellen?
How does he look?
Too comfortable. On your feet, Novak.
Yeah. You ought to rent that out, sweetheart. I'd sign a lease myself.
I'll finish the sweet talk, Novak. You get on your way. Here's the package.
No, I changed my mind about the package. You keep it.
Your boat's ready. Unless you want to get tossed in like a mackerel, take the package and beat it.
What's in it, and where does Sam Tolliver fit?
You asked once already with your head in her lap. You want me to sit down?
Well, you got brains after all.
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought they were all in your fists. Yeah, you're still smart.
Take this package. Show him the boat, Ellen.
I'm going to remember you, mister.
Ellen's going to lead you by the hand through the dark. Stop beefing and settle for the simple pleasures.
I will. I'll remember you.
Concentrate on Ellen. You'll get a better memory.
I went out on deck with the girl, and as I got to the starboard side, I noticed her hair for the first time. The way you're liable to suddenly notice a flower after a hard rain. Her hair was red, and as the orange lights of the bridge reflected against it, it seemed like a prairie fire, away down in the valley, flaring up quick and then burning low again. The rest of her would have made a good prairie fire, too. It was the only good thing I could think of on the way across the bay. The water was as quiet as a drowsy caterpillar, and I had a chance to think. Why had they changed their mind about giving me that package, and how wet were Sam Tolliver's feet? Well, it must have been about 11:30 when I pulled into the pier and started on the run for my office, the The lights were on, and I burst right in because I had a lot to ask Sam. But it wasn't Sam.
What's your hurry, mister?
I came here to meet a friend.
That's the guy laying in the corner. You don't have to hurry.
No, this isn't my friend.
He doesn't look like one. I'm Sergeant Grimes from Homicide. If you're Novak, you're in trouble.
Why?
A guy lying under your desk, dripping like a broken inkwell, and you trot out a question like that?
Well, it's a bum caper somewhere. I was supposed to wait for a guy named Sam Tolliver.
It might as well have been a streetcar. I'm not going to press you, Novak. I don't care. I'm just going to take you downtown.
Well, this boy quit too late. I've been in the bay the last 2 hours. You can check. I went out there to pick up a package.
The one you got in your arm?
Yeah. It's for a guy named Sam Tolliver.
Let's see.
Okay.
It doesn't say that. It says Mr. John Reedy, 720 Post Street.
Hmm? Well, I wonder what that means.
Let's find out. We'll take it by Reedy's place.
I got it for Sam Tolliver.
You can buy him another. We're going by Reedy's before we get downtown.
What's the matter with you? Do you want it on an 18-foot screen? I didn't kill the guy. I don't even know him. I don't even know this John Reedy.
Wait a minute, Novak. I believe you. I believe every word you're saying. Except this is one time you'd be better off lying.
When we left my office, I felt as if somebody had walked through my stomach on stilts. Oh, there were loose ends bobbing up everywhere, and you couldn't get to any of them. It was like chasing a spider with a bowling ball. With all this new stuff, I forgot about the ship. Who's going to worry about blood poisoning if he's busy having hemorrhages? I began to wonder more about Sam. Where was he? And how was I going to palm off that dead stand-in? Grimes didn't seem worried. We got into his Nash and headed for 720 Post Street. It was an apartment hotel, and Reedy lived up on the third floor. On the way in, Grimes picked up a key at the desk, and we rode up in the elevator with one of those shifty-eyed little guys who'd sell his mother if he didn't have to fatten her up. When we got to Reedy's door, Grimes took over.
Open up!
Maybe he can't hear you, Grimes.
Nobody home. Let's go in.
Why? We don't know him well enough to sneak in.
I read a hunch, Novak.
Okay. The light's on your side.
Leave it out. Let's look around.
Okay. The stray bodies belong to you, Grimes.
You go look in that set of bedrooms. I'll check over here in the library. Give me a yell if you see any.
All right.
Novak! Novak!
Two of them. I got one by the desk. The other started down the fire escape. I'm going down in front. Take this gun and stand by the fire escape. He may get trapped and start up, so keep your eyes open.
I walked into the library. The window was open and the curtains were blowing over the dead man's face. It was a good thing, because you can't split the difference with a service 45. I took him by the heels and dragged him away from the window. His eyes were rolled back as if he expected somebody to tap him on the shoulder and tell him it was all a mistake. His face was contorted and frightened, maybe a little embarrassed, like a deer caught in a traffic jam. Well, I stayed at the window about 10 minutes and watched the fire escape. There was no action there, and Grimes wasn't back, so I started for the door. I had company right away.
Hello, Novak. You move?
Oh, Hellman.
That's a big gun you got.
Well, ask Junior here on the floor. He thinks it's even bigger.
I'll check myself.
Sure, and it's going to be easy because it's right in the family.
Yeah?
Yeah. Belongs to one of your boys down in Homicide.
Go ahead.
A sergeant by the name of Grimes steamed in here and knocked down Junior, and then he beat it down to get the other guy.
I don't believe it.
Well, talk to him.
That's why I don't believe it. There's nobody on the force named Grimes. On this one, you're all alone, Novak.
There's got to be a Grimes. The guy had on a uniform.
I don't care if he had on a play suit, Novak. The guy's a phony. He's not from Homicide. He's a killer.
That's what I meant, Hellman. I knew Hellman was right. If Grimes was on the level, he'd have booked me instead of coming up here. He came up to Reedy's with murder in mind. Even if they believed the story about Grimes, I was still in a spot. That made me accessory to murder. And I was going to look worse when Hellman found the guy down in my office. On that one, I had star billing. Oh, everywhere I turned, things were worse. I knew it was going to take a low-budget miracle to bail me out. It was like trying to give nose drops to a herd of elephants. Hellman seemed to like the idea. Hellman rolled the guy, and there was no identification. But he never works for nothing.
A few bucks in the guy. I'll put it in the safe.
The only safe you got has suspenders on it.
I don't like that, Novak.
Oh, you'd do anything for a buck, Hellman. If you got the right bid, you'd sell the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. Thanks, Hellman. I'm getting a big list tonight.
I can do all of that I want, Novak, because you're in the corner pocket now. I get a tip-off from the Chronicle to come up here, and I find you holding last rights.
You got a bigger headache, Hellman. There's another stiff down at my place.
Huh?
That's right, Grimes again. He was sitting there when I walked in.
Where were you?
Out in the bay, picking up a package. It's right there on the desk.
What's in it?
I don't know. It was for a friend of mine named Sam Tolliver. He's disappeared, and Grimes brought the package up here.
I'll take it downtown.
You better tag by the China Star. That's where I picked up the package. It's out in the bay, so you'll need a boat. Even a guy with your complex needs a boat.
I'll touch all the bases, Novak. You just stay 10 cents away from headquarters. You can pay your own way into the can.
Yeah, well, that's what'll happen if I wait for you. I'll be standing out in the downpour.
That's right, Novak. If there's a chance I want to see you get first prize.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be stuck unless I shop around myself because you got lockjaw of the brain, Hellman.
Yeah?
That wouldn't hurt you so much, but if it spreads, you're going to be in trouble. That's what I'm waiting for. Well, if something didn't happen soon, I was going to be about as embarrassed as a hostess with leaky plumbing. I was counting on Hellman to shake down the skipper of the China Star. If that didn't work, I could close shop. I didn't have any leads. There wasn't anything I could do but sit on my hands. It was like taking your niece to a nightclub. I had to stumble around until something showed. So I looked up the only honest guy I know, an ex-doctor and a boozer by the name of Jocko Madigan. Oh, he was all right until he found out sometimes you can feel as bad the next morning without a hangover. I toured the town and finally found him at Lupo's trying to put the vineyards out of business.
Ah, Patsy, you're just in time to start the day off right. Mama Lupo, some wine for Mr. Novak. You can only have a quart. We're running low.
Look, it's almost midnight, Jocko. I got to talk to you.
We're not going to turn into pumpkins. You need some wine.
No, I don't.
Patsy, when you die, the artwork is going to be simple. On your grave, they'll chisel a picture of a pair of slacks, a hamburger, and a double malt.
All right, Jocko.
The final symbols of a decayed civilization, because that's as close as you ever got to civilization, a remote connection at best. Like a bookie, they love horses, but they die on a stock farm. It's the same with you and civilization.
You all through, Jocko?
I won't fight against your sober babble. What's the matter?
There's a dead guy down in my office.
A friend of ours?
No.
Oh, that's too bad. We'll miss the wake.
I'm going to get half hung by homicide. The other half is dead up in a post-street apartment. Hellman thinks I'm the boy.
Patsy, I wish you wouldn't hang around me when you've just killed somebody. You tarnish my declining years.
I went out to the bay to pick up a package. When I got back to my place, instead of a friend named Sam Tolliver, there was a dead guy there and a phony cop called Grimes.
How do you make the distinction?
He grabbed the package and we took it up to Post Street. After a quick hassle in the dark, I'm standing over a dead guy in John Reedy's apartment.
John Reedy?
Yeah. Do you know him?
Most people do. He's running for office tomorrow. Is he the dead man?
No, I don't think so. What about Reedy?
He's running for a board job.
Yeah? Would anybody have a reason to work a plant on him?
Maybe.
What's he like?
Oh, sort of liberal by marriage.
Hmm?
A reactionary with a rich wife. Supposed to be a good man.
Well, how about the opposition?
Oh, a lot of them are running. One is Simpson. He couldn't beat an asthmatic turtle across a tennis court.
Well, we're getting somewhere at least. If Reedy's good, the gambling dough would frame him to lose.
Yes, if politicians can ever lose. A murder in his apartment would look too phony, though.
Yeah, but maybe that package wouldn't. Jocko, you gotta help me. I want you to check on the registration of the China Star and then nose around to find out what you can about tomorrow's election, will you?
If we lived in a monarchy, this wouldn't happen.
That fast double play has got something to do with this election. Now hurry up, Jocko, and when you're through, tag by my place. I'll call you there.
Have you a bottle in the house?
There's a tap in the kitchen. That'll have to do.
No, thanks. Outside of a child in pain, the most pathetic sound in the world is running water. Good night, lover.
I left Jocko and ducked into a phone booth. When I called Hellman, he poured out news like a rotary press. They broke open that package down at headquarters. It was full of dope. Plain garden variety, the kind a man uses to forget either his wife or secretary. I was sure then the package was a plant on Reedy. Hellman didn't see it that way. He said the two dead men were Gunsel's, last address before San Francisco State Prison at Joliet. I needled him about that phony cop Grimes. Hellman said they just got a tip-off by telephone. Grimes was an ex-sergeant in homicide whose real name was Vic Rothery. I asked him who phoned in the tip-off, and Hellman said he didn't know the guy. His name was Sam Tolliver. I got out of the Chronicle morgue and looked up everything I could on John Reedy. All politicians' children sit on the floor. There was a picture of Reedy there with his family grouped around him on the floor. I pulled the clips on Vic Rothery. It was Grimes, all right. Well, that gave me something to work on, so I went on the prowl for Ellen Morrow. I found her running a dice game in a little after-hours joint on Eddie Street.
You want chips, Novak?
You don't want to play against yourself? Yeah, give me some.
All right. See how good you are.
Okay.
Eight's your point.
Yeah. You seen Sam Tolliver?
Make your point, Patsy.
That's it. Where's Sam Tolliver?
Five. You're not even warm. You're not warm on Sam, either.
He left me hanging with a murder rap.
Your friend double-crossed you.
He double-crossed you, too.
Another five. You're in a rut, Patsy.
He turned in Grimes. That's right, baby. They know he's Vic Rothery now. You still like Sam Tolliver?
No. Keep rolling, darling.
Is Grimes your boyfriend?
He used to be. I'm sentimental.
Where's Sam Tolliver?
The Herrick Hotel. When you see him, tell him I sent you.
I will if we talk that long.
There it is. Eight.
That's right.
I guess I lose, Patsy.
I guess you do. Be seeing you, baby. She changed when I left. The first time out, she was alive and breezy like the Maine coast in July. But now she was broken up and lonely looking. And as I walked out, I thought of an old Dixie cup somebody had used up and thrown in the alley. Well, I got down to the Herrick Hotel, but Sam Tolliver wasn't there. Maybe it was better that way. I left a note for him, a short note that even a Mongolian idiot couldn't trip up on. If Sam was going to show his hand, he had to do it soon. When I got back to my apartment, Jocko was already there. He was giving a concert for the mice.
Oh, she pushed a baby carriage. She pushed a baby carriage in the merry, merry month of May.
All right, Jocko.
She pushed a baby carriage. She pushed a baby carriage. She pushed it for a Williams man who's far, far away.
Oh, stop it, will you?
Patsy, I wish you'd get rid of that radio and buy a good harpsichord.
What'd you find out, Jocko?
Nothing from the China Star. She weighed anchor and went to sea at 11:45.
How about Reedy?
Well, there's heavy gambling money against him. And there's talk about a last-minute scandal. All the newspapers had tip-offs.
Where was he tonight?
At a rally in the Mission District with his whole family.
Well, that'd leave time for a plant. They broke open that package. It was full of dope.
Oh, that makes sense. He was once under treatment for malaria. The drugs found in his apartment would make it look bad.
Yeah, I'll get it. Hello, Novak talking.
I hope so, because you got a lot to do.
What's on your mind, Hellman?
A girl named Ellen Morrow. Who killed her?
Did they?
About 20 minutes ago. Vic Rothery's picture was all over the place.
Yeah, they were chums. You better pick up Sam Tolliver. He's at the Herrick Hotel.
I'd rather have Vic Rothery.
Haven't you picked him up yet?
No, we're on our way out.
Well, you better hurry, Hellman. There won't be any voters left.
I thought Sam Tolliver was a friend of yours.
Well, that's the trouble with close friends. You give them the shirt off your back so they can see where to put in the knife. After Hellman's call, I knew we were coming up for the last hand. I met him, and we rode down to Vic Rothery's hotel. It was early morning, just about the time Dawn is too sleepy to get out of bed. In the pale light, Geary Street looked like a shabby old lady with a snootful, and Rothery's hotel was worse. Hellman flashed a badge on the night clerk, who reached over and handed us a key. It was a funny thing to notice then, but the guy's hands were short and his fingers were peeled and stained yellow as if they'd been dipped in weak acid. Well, we rode up to Rothery's room. As we got out of the elevator and turned the corner, somebody ducked into Rothery's room. That was enough for Hellman. He started down the hall.
Open up in there!
Well, you got another customer, Hellman.
Open up!
Come on in. You're going to wake everybody up.
Hello, Sam.
Come on in. I'll mind the gun. It's loaded.
You're a handy cop, Hellman.
That's it. I'll close the door. All right, over near the window.
Yeah.
Go on.
Sure. You got an answer for Rothery here?
You too, copper. Over near the window.
I ask you. You got an answer for Rothery here?
You're looking at it, mister. You know, Patsy, I'm sorry you came. I could bounce a few off of this guy with no pain at all, but it's going to hurt on you.
Don't kid me, Sam.
I don't know why you came, Patsy. You could have left me alone. I didn't mean to put you in for this. Things went wrong and you were in, that's all. But I didn't mean to do it, Patsy.
Give the man your gun.
You were a good guy to me, Novak. I'm sorry you drew the deuce. I'm really sorry because, well, you were a good guy to me.
Well, I'm not anymore, Sam. You got 5 feet to make up your mind.
I got it made up, Patsy. Now stay back. Let me try it out on him first.
You've had practice.
Stay back, Patsy. I'm in a hole and I'll burn my way out. You know that. Patsy, I'm in a hole. I gotta get out.
Don't kid me, Sam. I was your last friend. All you got now is the road.
Stay back, Patsy, please. Patsy, stay back.
Don't let that, Sam.
I must have prayed wrong, Novak.
Yeah. Sorry, Sam. I'm a tough loser.
Yeah. You were right, Patsy. It's a bum down for a small robber.
For a while, you looked big.
Not for long, though.
No. You're a small-time bum, Sam, and you're better off dead.
I wouldn't argue. I'm sorry, though.
I doubt it.
I guess that's right. I didn't try very hard.
How's your friend, Novak?
Let's go. My friendship's over. Well, Hellman finally pieced it all together. He got that skipper back and put him under the lights. The story was damp, but it fit together. They were all in on a deal to railroad John Reedy. Vic Rothery headed up a bunch to plant the dope in his apartment. But Sam Tolliver got anxious and decided to get the stuff for sale. He talked a couple of buddies into it and sent me out to the ship to pick it up. The captain smelled a switch and knocked me out long enough to get word to Rothery on the beach. Rothery got the guy in my office and the other guy that Sam posted in Reedy's place in case anything went wrong. That left only Sam on the other team. Rothery wore the uniform because it was an easy way to plant the stuff in Reedy's apartment. But the timetable went haywire and he got tripped up by that tip-off call to the Chronicle. That's about the way it was. Well, Hellman asked only one question. How come Sam Tolliver headed for the girl's place and then Rothery's? I don't know. Except maybe that note I left Sam. How'd I know he'd believe a lie? Oh, it worked out for everybody except John Reedy. He lost the election anyway. Jocko forgot to mention the guy was a Republican.
Pat Novak for Hire was previously released by ABC, the American Broadcasting Company, for listeners in the United States, and rebroadcast for our men and women overseas. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
That's Case Closed for this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with another hour of old-time radio crime. In the meantime, there's more old-time radio at relicradio.com, past episodes of this show, and more old-time radio in general. There's also links there to our forum, Shoutcast stream, and a donate button if you'd like to help support it all. Thank you very much to those who have. And thank you for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.